on May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Hello and welcome to Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast. I'm Mike Sweeney, a writer on Conan, and
I'm Jesse Gaskell, also a writer on Conan. This is the podcast about all things Conan related.
Yes. So thank God we work there because it helps.
It does help.
It does give us a leg up. Yes.
Sweeney, I saw you in real life this morning.
That's right. We saw each other.
Yeah, in person.
We had coffee together.
We did. You were wearing a peacoat and a scarf. You looked very fall.
There's really never an excuse to wear a scarf ever in LA, maybe in the last 1,000 years, but
there's not. But it's a good thing to have around in case you need to strangle someone.
Exactly. You were, I have a blindness for what people are dressed in.
It's probably for the best.
Right. You were in a pants ensemble. Is that
it was.
How you say it?
I was wearing trousers.
Uh-huh, trousers.
And a sweater.
Very nice.
Yeah, we got together with some other Conan writers.
Yep.
Just to catch up.
That was fun.
Gossip a little bit.
And gossip is a very loose term.
We were hoping to drum some up.
Because this show seems like it could be a good delivery system for gossip. If we had our act together.
And then also, I mean, this is actually a pretty big piece of news. Next week on November 3rd, Conan's going to be recording the first live taping of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
Yes.
Here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, at the Wiltern Theater.
At the Wiltern Theater, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a 2,000-seat theater, so that's going to be wild.
Have you been involved with that at all?
No, I got sent the rundown for the show.
Okay,
so
yeah.
It's basically a live version of the podcast, which I think,
yeah.
I assume is what all his fans would want.
Yeah.
He's probably going to be very excited to be back in
I'm
front of a live
sure
audience.
He is. Yes. I feel like once he hears that crowd.
Oh boy.
It's really going to get him going.
Oh boy. It's going to be only live podcasts from now on.
Yeah. Every single night. Huh. Wait. I think I'm describing a late night show. But yeah. So that's going to be in LA. But if you can't make it, they are going to release that, of
right.
course.
Yes.
Wherever you get your podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly,
yeah.
than Conan's podcast is our show.
Oh, right, right, right.
Inside Conan, because we have an excellent show today.
I'm very excited about today's show.
Me too.
It's our second episode of season 3. And one thing we didn't get to cover in season 1 and 2, the musical guests on the Conan show, which,
yes.
you know, 28 years of late night television, musical guests on the show were such a big part of the show.
They were. It was often where, like, huge bands would get their first booking.
Right, on television.
Yeah. I mean, one of those bands early on was Radiohead.
The very first band, and we're going to hear all about that.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was before OK Computer, and, you know, their big hit was Creep, I think, at the time.
Right.
It was a band that was going places. What we're leading up to as our big guest today is Mr. Jim Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the music booker on Late Night with Conan, on The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien, and on The Conan Show.
For 24 years, yeah.
Yep. And currently, now he's the music producer on The Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Jimmy Kimmel Live, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get right into it with Mr. Jim Pitt.
Hi, welcome, Jim.
Hello, guys. It's great to see you both.
Hi, Jim. Yeah, good to see you again.
I miss you guys. Yeah.
Yeah, I miss you too.
Us too.
Those are legitimate kisses. They're not Euro kisses.
Right.
But so you were there from the very beginning.
I was. I was there.
One of the lifers.
I was a Conan lifer. I started working on the show. Well, I worked with Conan at SNL.
Ah.
When he was a writer there. And
that's interesting. I didn't know that the writers would interact with the music booker.
Well, when Conan started, I had that experience that I think a lot of people do with him. I remember going home and telling my wife, like, I met a guy today who's like maybe one of the funniest people I've ever met, which I know sounds crazy, but he, like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd spent that much time with him, but we definitely connected. And it's not like we became best friends, but, you know, at SNL, especially for a new writer like that, when you would identify someone who was sort of nice and supportive and, you know.
And a good laugher.
A good laugher, yeah.
Oh, my God. You get a pair of handcuffs.
He was like, I got a live one. Yeah.
And of course, Smigel worked at SNL.
Robert Smigel.
Robert and I worked together my entire time at SNL. You know, we were pals and got to know Conan a little bit. And so when the opportunity came up, each season, like the year after I started, I got a job in the talent department. And then the next season, I became a talent coordinator and just sort of worked my way up to music booking.
Right.
Which is what I did the last few years I was there. And so, you know, when Letterman was leaving, it was obviously a huge deal. You know, we all know the story, obviously.
Right, it was leaving NBC.
Leaving NBC, and they were, and Lauren was given the hour to find, you know, given the 12:30 show.
Charged with picking Letterman's replacement.
I'm assuming that everybody read Bill Carter. Anyway, when he chose Conan, I was thrilled for Conan and knowing that Robert was involved. And I knew that Jeff Ross was going to be involved, and I knew Jeff a little bit. So I saw that as an opportunity to do something musically, or to be part of a cool startup. And
yeah. Were you like, I don't know how much longer SNL is going to last.
Anyway. I know. Listen, I did the calculus, and I think,
there's no way it could go beyond 95.
Yeah, no. But no, the second element was that music-wise, I always thought the 12:30, like on the Letterman show, they were able to do a much more varied lineup. You know, SNL had to be big, big, big.
In terms of the musical acts.
Yeah, and what appealed to me was, you know, doing stuff that was sort of all over the map and a little more eclectic. And so
finding new talent.
Yeah. So Conan, they did a press conference at the, his opening press conference was at the Rainbow Room where he was introduced. And I ran into he and Smigel up there and said, hey, you know, I'd love to be a part of this show. And, you know, one thing led to another.
You just happened to be dancing up there.
I was, yes.
That was a fortuitous moment, I guess.
It
right?
was. And you know, I spoke to Lorne and he sort of gave his blessing for me to change shows. And so I was part of the first, Paula Davis, myself, who's a head talent booker.
Talent producer.
Yeah. There were only a handful of us, but we were there, I would say, and like the show went on in September. We were there in like July for the startup.
Were you like, well, the show's coming on in September. It's July. I'll get around to looking at bands like, you know, late August.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no rush.
Kona requested the first guest that was on late night.
Well, yes. I mean, he is distilled it down to like they told me I could have whoever I want. I mean, it was that in a way
within reason. Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Conan, all that summer while we were in the office, it's sort of a well-known story now. But he, as he always does, walked around with his guitar. But the song that he was more obsessed with than any was "Creep."
Sure.
So that was 1993, and I remember him doing that in 2021.
Last week.
Right.
So he's been doing it for 30 years and still hasn't improved.
And, you know, you have to remember, they weren't yet Radiohead.
Right.
You know, they were another
band.
Was
that the year their first album came out?
Creep was the single, was the current single.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and yes, it's when that album came out. So I, you know, went right out to Capitol Records and said, hey, you know, everyone's aware of the new show. And like, hey, we'd love for them to be the first music guest. And so it wasn't really a huge get at the time. I mean, yes, they had a big hit and Conan loved it.
Right.
But they just as easily could have been.
It could have been a one hit wonder.
Could have been, you know, Urge Overkill or one of, you know, the Breeders, or, and, you know, any other band that we had on in those right. weeks, you know. But of course,
yeah.
in retrospect, it looks genius and it's yeah. awesome.
Totally.
I love it. I mean, it's just a great, it's a great legacy and it was a great kickoff for music on the show. And and Conan loved it. So
did Conan try to play Creep with them on the show? Did he want to do that?
No. You know, I don't know if you, Sweens, you remember probably, Jesse, I don't know if you've watched many of the old music clips or remember them from when they aired, but the first year on the show, one of Conan and Robert's ideas was to have footage, like stock footage, playing on a screen behind the bands.
Right.
And, weird.
Yes. Just non sequitur, ridiculous, you know.
And was it like a menu that the bands could choose from?
Yes. Mm. We gave them, our film researcher, I don't recall who it was at the time, but
right.
would gave us a list of here are these, right. you know. And so I remember
it's like when you do karaoke and there's always just sort of like, it
is, exactly. Oh. So we took
random stock footage. Yeah.
We took Radiohead up to the 9th floor conference room and, you know, showed them a few of the different options, and they chose cars driving around in circles, very slow, like in slow motion. And so that's what appears behind them on their first Conan appearance.
That's so strange.
Yes.
I love how random it is.
But some of the other ones were like, scenes of people having dental work done.
Businessmen handshaking after an important deal.
Exactly.
Those are, the dental work was for like folk acts.
Someone used it eventually. I can't remember who.
Jim, do you remember from early on, what was your first big get that you were like, oh my God, I can't believe we booked this person?
It's a good question. The first few months were sort of a combination of alternative acts, like a lot of new acts.
Mm-hmm.
The premiere of the show really coincided with sort of the alternative scene, you know, early 90s. Then there were a lot of bands.
Yeah.
And Letterman, when they moved to CBS, they made the decision that, you know, we're only going after big artists.
Right.
So it did leave a door open to us to have a lot of these bands on that, you know, maybe would have done Letterman previously.
Right.
So the first few months, it's a combination of newer artists like Radiohead. I'm looking at the first couple of weeks. Urge Overkill, The Breeders, Sheryl Crow,
mm-hmm.
her debut.
Yeah. Oh, is that She'd true?
Done, Sheryl Crow had done a test show for us a few weeks before we went on the air.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did she have her giant hit song yet?
No. She was a new artist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, I think I made a deal with the guy at A&M Records. And, if she does this test show, we'll book her a few weeks later on the actual show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's people like that, Bare Naked Ladies and mm-hmm. The Cranberries. I mean, that was there.
Oh, yeah.
And Bjork.
Oh, what stock footage did Bjork choose?
Oh, that's a good question. We should find that. It was those people combined with like Les Paul, Ruth Brown, like all these old timers who are
great legends. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Les Paul played and paneled like second week of the show, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So some of those sound like big bookings in retrospect because of who they became.
Right.
But the first one that, because he had had a career renaissance and he kind of brought some class to the joint, was Tony Bennett. He did us Christmas. And I remember feeling like, okay, because he was happening again. And he was
right.
Tony Bennett. And he was a sort of a combination of both of those things, you know.
Old and new.
And it really felt like now it's a real show now. You know, we got Tony Bennett.
This is class.
Yeah. So, and then he did the show 16 years in a row at Christmas.
I always remember. That's how I knew it was Christmas, that Tony Bennett was hanging out in the 6A hallway all day.
Yeah.
He seemed very friendly and chill.
He was. So that was the first one that felt like a big deal.
Right.
But then like a couple of months later, well, again, they were a new band, but like Green Day made their first TV appearance a couple months later.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know what you are really pointing out, you know, because of the passage of time, it's hard to, when you hear these names, you're like, oh, well, they were already famous.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool.
But they were just like, people with a demo CD that
right. Yeah, they were new artists.
Yeah. And,
Of course Conan loved them from the first time they were on. But yeah, so it was a real mixed bag. And paneling them was adventurous, especially with some of the younger bands. It was awesome because it made for some great moments. Like there's a great clip that we ran, the Breeders were on.
Right.
Again. They had paneled with Conan like the second week of the show.
Sometimes back then there'd be like, oh, we still have time to kill.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's talk to the musical guest.
Exactly.
Is that how that happened? Or was this planned in advance that the Breeders would get interviewed by Conan?
I think at first it was planned. I think there was a thought that like, yeah, let's talk to the music guest. Then it did turn more into, you know, Jeff would say, you know, see if we can get a few minutes from, you know, whoever.
Right.
Just in case we needed the time.
Got it. As an option.
We talked to a lot of people, and one of the funniest was Dick Dale, who was like, you know, a great guitar legend.
The big surf guitar pioneer.
Yeah. And Conan, being a guitar guy, just loved, you know, having those guys on. Dwayne Eddy and you know, people like that.
Right.
And
right.
Dick Dale is sort of a maniac and told these great stories. And then halfway through, you realize he's full of shit. Like, I know that's not true. He told the story about Ed Sullivan. You know, the reason he stood that way is because he got shot in the war. And like, Ed Sullivan, I think he's in the army. The reason he was hunched over.
This was before Wikipedia.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but you know, the guest situation in those days was, you know, it was challenging, the lead guest
right.
situation. So we often did have time. I remember one, and there was a thought to keep guests on the panel.
Yes, after their segment to stay out.
Yes, try to have some intermingling.
Yeah.
But I remember like one day it was like Bob Vila and Bare Naked Ladies putting together Legos or something. I can't remember what. I was like, wow.
Right.
This is something.
Those are still, I mean, that the idea behind that is great. Is like,
it
let's
is.
Put these disparate people out there on a couch
mm-hmm.
and who knows what'll happen.
It was good. And it got Conan,
yeah.
you know, sort of people took notice, I will say, in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, and by the next spring, there was an article in Billboard about the music on the show. And we definitely started to see, you know, the demand.
Right. To play on the show.
Yeah. To get on Conan definitely picked up.
Did that make your job harder or easier? Because now you have to deal with...
It's a double-edged sword.
Sure.
Yeah,
it cuts both
yeah,
ways.
Yeah, it does. It's nice to have the options. And of course, if the names are bigger, I mean, that was always a goal too.
Right.
Of course, as the years went on, the names got much bigger.
Right.
And, you know, by the mid-aughts, yeah. you know, we had U2 for a whole show and, you know, a week of Neil Young. And,
mm-hmm.
The White Stripes.
Right. The White Stripes were there for a whole week, right?
They were.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember that.
We did the Strokes. We did a residency every Monday for a month. We did the Strokes.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. So they.
By the third week, it's like, oh, those guys again. They leave a mess in the dressing room.
But we still did a fair amount of, you know, like the James Browns of the world. Elton John did the show.
That. Yes.
I remember feeling he did his single and then the rep actually asked me, like, what do you want him to do as a second song?
A request.
I said, would he do Border Song? And he did it alone on piano.
Aww.
That's amazing.
Yeah, no, it was awesome.
Beautiful.
You know, Bowie, of course, was.
Yeah, Bowie was on the show a bunch.
David Bowie. That was always exciting.
that's one of my favorite just things is that David Bowie liked us enough to keep coming back and doing comedy.
Yes.
And, you know, when he passed away, we
had a great sense of humor.
We had that montage that was just killer, you know?
Yeah,
from his interviews, which was great.
Yeah.
He did. We used to do a bit with celebrities who were on the show. So many of the comedy pitches were like, this guy's already going to be here. They're trapped like rats. And we're going to make him do comedy for us. I remember one, there's a writer, Greg Cohen, and I had this idea. And a lot of times writers pitch things for musical acts they love. So we, you know, we love David Bowie. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, who didn't? But the idea was David Bowie, years before he went into music, was in a comedy team with Baltimore Oriole baseball manager Earl Weaver, who was kind of this legendarily cranky, you know, kicking the dirt at umpire manager. And we thought, oh my God, if we could get the two of them, I don't know how we thought this would ever happen. In what universe? Like, we, David Bowie, if you say yes, all we have to do is fly you to Baltimore. I mean, it didn't even make sense. And I remember we kept repitching it to you, like, any word? And we'd be like, we knew Bowie, we thought Bowie was the easier get. We're like, well, we'll get Bowie on board, and then we'll use Bowie as leverage with baseball manager Earl Weaver.
I hope that Jim never pitched that to Bowie.
I'm sure I did. On ones that I was like excited about or felt had a better shot.
Right.
I would be, here's a great idea from the writers. The other version would be, the writers have asked me to forward this.
I'm contractually obligated.
Right. Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
I remember this one got done because it was funny. But remember when we had it was a bit where we had the Max Weinberg 7 distracting Hootie and the Blowfish.
Yes.
During their performance, and one of the beats was Max squeezing a teat and it squirting milk on Darius Rucker's face.
What?
And they said yes.
The bit was called "The Band Is Jealous."
The band is jealous,
and it was the idea that Max and the guys are like jealous of all the musical guests that come on because
right.
they have to sit there and watch. So we do pre-tapes. Like you're saying, we had a live milk cow in the studio with Max getting down and pulling up
a teat and squeezing milk.
And then you cut to Darius Rucker
getting
blasted in the face with milk.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was Darius or one of the other guys in the band, but it was someone, one of the Blowfish got blasted with fresh milk.
Homogenized.
Chilled milk. It was totally...
I mean, one of the best music comedy and bits ever on Conan was Slipknot's.
Yes.
Yes.
Which took over a year.
Oh, the tribute album to Slipknot.
Yes.
I should just explain what Slipknot's is if people don't know. I think it was one of those last minute, we're sitting in the writer's room and, you know, there's a board with all the guests. And sometimes we look at the guests for the week and think of ideas for that. And Slipknot, the band, was going to be on probably the next night. And I don't know who came up with the idea, but it was John Glazer,
Stack,
Andy Blitz, and Brian Stack, three hilarious writer-performers at the time. They pitched this bit called, oh, Conan made a mistake. He double-booked Slipknot with the comedy troupe Slipknot's. And then they wrote a little act, which lasted 15 seconds, which was them singing a song, "We're the Slipknot's," and then one of them falls down, and they go, oh, and they throw peanuts on the floor.
Yeah, we're slipping on nuts.
We're slipping on nuts. And then someone falls down and goes, look, he fell down. And he goes, I slipped on a nut. And that was it. And that was their whole act. And Conan would keep rebooking them. And they kept doing the same act. So, you know, and Conan would get that fake frustration. But anyway, Andy Blitz, I think, came to you and pitched, after they had been on a few times, hey, can we get real musical acts to do a tribute to that Slipknot song?
Yeah, and the way we went about it, which was great, was that when a band was in-house, like you're saying.
Right, trapped.
That's when we would pitch. Yeah, that's when we would really, we didn't try to go out and shoot them in other places. It was when, right, while they were there and on the stage, you know, all set to go.
Right.
And over the course of, I'd say more than a year even, Debbie Wonder was the music production coordinator at that time.
Right.
So I would book the bands and hand them off to her, and she dealt with, you know, all of the production. So, and I was living in Nashville for part of this time at Conan and commuting 1 week a month. And,
oh, wow.
So she did a lot of the, I have to give her credit.
You were a pandemic pioneer years before.
I was a pioneer, yes, pre-Zoom.
Sorry. So yeah, you kind of hand off the...
Yeah. So between us, we booked all of these artists over the course of a year or so. And the result was, it was awesome. I mean, it was really funny. And you had big names. You had like Coldplay.
Yeah.
Patti Smith did it.
I know.
Wow.
I know.
John Mayer did it.
Yeah. Yeah. Los Lobos.
Steve Winwood. Yeah. No, Los Lobos.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
And I remember how painstaking it was to put that together, you know, because
yeah.
I think a lot of acts said no.
Yes.
Believe it or not. Some acts weren't going to sing the tribute song.
Well, you know, anytime you're booking a thing with multiple artists, or as soon as you get one or two, you have to have somebody to start, you know?
What I can't believe Coldplay at kind of the height of Coldplay.
I mean, Coldplay's another one, just going back to like their first TV appearance in the States was, you know, they did Yellow on our show.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. Wow. John Mayer is another one.
Yeah.
We had a good run of first TV appearances.
John Mayer loves comedy. Mm-hmm. Like he would always say yes if you pitched a comedy bit to him.
I was saying that, you know, the music on the show got some notice, and it became a bigger thing in the industry eventually, to the point where we were offered the opportunity to make an album of Conan music performances. Yeah.
Wow.
Bowie was on there.
Bjork.
That was called Live from 6A.
It was.
The studio. Yeah. That was great. I remember that came out. There was a big party for it.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a lot of politicking and stuff for what songs would go on that album? Like, I can't even imagine.
Mm.
We just went out to a ton of people. And yes, it was not easy, but the sound on the show was great. People were fans of Conan. And when David Bowie said yes, you know, that again opened up the, it kind of greased the skids for other people.
And a great chance to repitch Bowie Weaver.
Exactly.
What an opportunity for you in so many ways.
Bonus track, yes.
Right, of course. Well, you mentioned the great sound. I remember the night you two was on the show, and I think they played four songs, mm-hmm. and they did, Bono did the year 2000, and they were great.
That's right.
But I remember I was editing something that night, and was in the hallway at like 10:30 at night, and they stayed 3 or 4 hours after the taping to remix or re-engineer all of their songs for the show. And I was kind of blown away by that.
Yeah. Yeah. They were right up until we delivered it for air. You know, it was right up against the deadline. But they were super involved. Yeah.
Yeah. That was impressive, you know, just to see that attention to detail.
Yeah. I was thinking about that show and the Neil Young week, which, believe it or not, Neil Young did the show for a full week.
Right. For every night for a week. Mm-hmm.
Those were weeks apart in 2005. And it made me think that and the White Stripes week, things like that. We were open to, like, we are not an automatic no. I think, you know, in their marketing meetings, they probably have these ideas all the time. Go to Letterman and see if they'll do a full week. Go and do, and like, we were the show that would be like, okay.
Yeah. You
know, yeah. We'll
That's it. A whole week we don't have to book.
Yeah.
Jim Pitt is enthusiastically nodding his head yes. Is it true that the White Stripes' last live performance was on our show?
Yes.
Wow.
Our final late night show.
Right.
They were our last guest before we moved to California. Yep. And that was the last time they performed together.
And they broke up after that. Yeah.
Sweens, I was trying to think when I was preparing for this, I was thinking of like so many of the stories, of course, are about things that went great. And then there were some moments that were, do you remember when the band Goldfinger was on?
And, yes.
And the guy, that's this clip, we didn't post it, but it's on, you can see it on YouTube.
So, the song is over, right? And Conan goes over.
Mm-hmm.
Like he'd always cross over to the band and right. say, hey, that was great. And kind of shake hands with the band members while they go out to commercial. And something, what happened at that?
Well, he was super enthusiastic. I think it was the drummer.
Yeah.
Came around and like gave Conan a big hug. And Conan's playing along. You know, he's having fun with
right.
him. And, mm-hmm. and the guy lifts him up and Conan goes over his shoulder. This is obviously a big guy.
Right.
Falls onto the stage on his head.
Oh, my God.
You know, we are horrified, but he jumps up right away and says, I'm okay.
Right.
You know, I mean, literally before we even went to commercial, it was clear that he was okay, but it was scary.
How often did the guests themselves want to perform again after, like, because you tape the performance and then, you know, would they ever come to you and be like, we really got to do that again?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember instances of that.
Yeah, yeah. Jeff was not in favor of shooting again, usually. And so it had to be...
Got a reservation.
Yeah, we want to get Conan out of there, and I get it. You know, he just wanted to rap and get the crew out, and it's costing us money and all that. I totally get it. But it had to be, you know, a string breaks or an amp breaks, or mm-hmm. because the band sometimes would, or maybe they were off key or something. But if it was something imperceptible to us,
mm-hmm. yeah,
we would.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, yeah. It was. Oh, and Roey Hershkovitz, who became the new Debbie Wonder when she left.
Yes.
Yeah, he would be the one dealing with that usually.
So, right. Oh, I see. That's good. It's good to have a buffer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you were in Nashville. That's even if you were upstairs, it'd be like a Jim's working today from Nashville.
It's funny because when I was not on site, which was, you know, a fair amount of the time, you couldn't watch the show on Zoom, and we didn't mm-hmm. have the technology for me to watch it while it was happening.
Right.
So I would just sort of at 5:20 Central Time, I would wait for Debbie or Roey to say all good. If Jeff was going to text or call or email, that was when it was going to happen. Or after the post-mortem, after the post-show meeting.
Uh-huh.
There was one time I booked this band, the Polyphonic Spree.
Yeah.
Who were great.
It was like 12 people.
It was 16. And
16 people.
Wow.
The sort of their shtick was that they were a cult and they all wore mm-hmm. white robes. And I had forgotten to mention that part to Conan or Jeff in advance of the booking. After the band, they were in character all afternoon, basically.
Oh,
you
boy.
Know,
so 16 people, and I kind of love that.
So Jeff, which totally made sense, was like, "You got to give us a heads up on these."
You
things,
were you know? Booked a cult?
Guilty.
No more improv.
Yeah, Mike. When you mentioned you two being there late, it reminds me of. Remember the blackout?
Yes, there was a blackout. And I think that I remember the band that was on that night. There was a blackout moments before we were about to tape the show.
Yeah.
And so Conan did an impromptu like 12-minute show. Yeah. Why? What happened in your...
No, I think it was the Dandy...
Warhols.
And they ended up... It's funny because, you know, New York was pretty much... It was shut down.
Right.
We had some fun up in the office for a while after the show.
Right, in
you
the dark.
And myself and a few other people, we had a couple of drinks.
Right.
And then we went out looking to find a place that was open. Anyway, the band did that. They went out, but they couldn't get back to their hotel. So they came back, used their pass, and they slept in the dressing room that night.
Right. I know that's true because, like, I lived in Brooklyn. I was like, there was no way for me to get home. And they said, well, we have a hotel room for you. And I walked to the hotel room at around 11 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yes, we have a room for you on the 28th floor. And I was like, great. And they said, so there's the staircase. And I'm like,
yes.
I'm going to sleep in the office. Like, I have an office. So I went back to 30 Rock. And there was kind of dim light on the sixth floor where our studio was, generator light. So I went into the band dressing room. And I was like, oh, my God, there's all this food still here, these couches. So I went to bed in the band dressing room. And at like 2 in the morning, these five guys burst into the room. And I was like, motherfucker, like, what's going on?
And this is our hotel room.
That's how I got to meet the Dandy Warhols. Mm. They were great cuddlers.
So I also had jotted down when I was preparing.
Yeah.
And not disasters, but in the early days, the lead guest booking was challenging. And there were some people that we had to give music slots to if we wanted to get them as guests. So, for instance, like Sandra Bernhardt, we had to let her sing a song. And
oh, wow. That's great.
Roger Clinton, which I don't know where that came from. But he performed on
Bill
the show.
Clinton's brother, yes. Roger. Yeah. I forgot he
no
was a
way.
Musician.
He was, yeah.
So the idea was if we ever wanted to get,
I think it would be the same show, you know.
Right.
And these two aren't, well, Cybill Shepherd, Kathleen Turner, they all sang on the show.
Oh, wow.
Katie Sagal, yeah. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Oh man, I didn't know any of that.
Yeah.
You broke them first.
Yeah.
Those, wow.
Yeah, but it was sort of like the compromise. Right. The other great compromise stories, and sweet. I think you'll remember this. One day, I get a call from a guy named John Henry Williams, and I know the name. He's Ted Williams' son. Yeah, the baseball legend.
Right.
You know, one of the greatest players of all, best hitter of all time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Former Boston Red Sox, Corks, Conan, you know, grew up in the shadow of Fenway Park, basically. And he was managing a band. And he said, he put it right out there and said, if you book this band, I can get my dad to do the show.
Oh, wow.
And so I asked Conan, and, you know, I'd listened to the band, and it's, I mean, Conan was like, they'd have to be like, how bad can they be?
right.
And we ended up booking him. Ted Williams did the show. And
that's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a thing that occurs to people. I'm sure you had to deal with that too. You probably can't even talk about, but there are probably like record labels where they're like, oh, you want our big,
we'll give you this. Yeah.
Act. You've got to book this person. They kind of dangle them, right?
Book the executive's daughter. Yeah.
Right. It's a power game. It is like the more powerful the show got, all of a sudden that balance probably shifted.
Yeah.
And then you were the one kind of like, well, you know, we'll see. I
will say that it's usually not as cut and dried as that. It's more,
right,
you take care of them on their developing artists. And then when the big one, you know, as opposed to saying, listen, if you want this, you got to do these, you know.
Right.
At least that's not how I operated.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And speaking of developing artists, like, would you go back in New York? Like, would you go out?
Yeah, or in Nashville.
How would you investigate new acts? Like, did you have a system, or would you go to clubs, or what would you do?
It was pretty random. I went to clubs. I went out a lot. I mean, I still do. Living in New York, went out all the time. And Nashville, too. I mean, everyone came through Nashville at some point. When I was living there.
It's a great way to get free drinks. Yeah. Like,
Jim Pitt's here.
I'm the booker. Yeah.
Well,
that is exciting, though. You never know. I mean, if you're truly seeing someone you didn't know anything about.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It makes a difference. It really does. And I always had to remind myself, like, if I was getting complacent, it's also like sometimes you go home and like to crank it up to go out and see something that starts at 10 or 11.
Oh my God.
You know, it's.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
LA's not, I'm stunned at like my son's in a band and I'm just like, oh, what time are you playing? You know, midnight. He's like, no, 7:30 to 7:50. I'm like, oh, okay, we're in LA.
How reasonable.
I love a 7:30 showcase or whatever.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's the best. Yeah.
How often would you see an act that you hadn't heard of that you were like, oh, I'm interested in booking these people?
Probably more often at something like South by Southwest, where there were so many bands playing, so many artists. Going out to see them in New York or, you know, or here in Nashville, it was always, they had always been pitched and I'd probably listened to them already, you know?
Right.
At something like a festival or like Bonnaroo, or, but South by, because it's like, that's the whole thing. Was the whole point of South By was to showcase artists, you know?
Right, right.
And so I'd come back from there often with a list of people I hadn't seen before, like, oh, I'd like to, you know, we should book them, you know?
I can't tell you how many times someone would like recommend an act or I'd get into like listening to some music and I'm like, wow, they're great. And then I'd Google them and you would book them on the show
on
like
the show.
2 years before. Yes. Yeah. I was like, wow, okay. But then it was great. I'd watch a clip of them on Conan and I was like, I was there and I was just oblivious to it. And now I'm a giant fan. I'm like,
I wasn't aware of the riches.
Damn you, Pitt.
I could be sure that a band was going to then be like on KCRW if they had been booked on our show.
Right, exactly. One other thing I should mention as far as, especially those early years when we would have some of these people on, the band, the house band, and Max was the band, the band leader, but Jimmy would do the charts and they would recreate, you know, they would have, I remember when we had Duane Eddy on. They would accompany these artists.
Oh, right. That happened a lot.
And they would recreate the sound beautifully. You know, I remember when Duane Eddy was on, and he did his big hit, Rebel Rouser, that song?
Yeah.
It's just a instrumental.
Now I know it.
We can edit that out, right? Can't you play
it? No. Loop it. It's already looped. Yeah, sorry. So go ahead.
I remember in rehearsal, they start, you know, so Max and Jimmy, you know, our band was on stage and.
Right.
And they went into it. And I would say after a few bars, like you could tell he was like stunned at how good it sounded. Like he turned around because they had recreated.
Right.
Like the horn players did these backing vocals and it was just so perfectly done that.
Wow.
Like those guys were such a valuable tool for moments like that as far as music booking.
I'm really glad you brought that up because
me too.
That happened a lot where they would accompany or back up acts. How would that happen? Would they be aware that we had this great house band or was it something you always offered as kind of an option?
We offered it as an option.
Right.
It's sort of, you know, it's on the menu. If they don't have a band or if they're only going to be in town by themselves.
Right.
We just let people know we've got these great musicians and they're available. So there were some funny moments. I mean, Max ended up playing drums with Death From Above 1979 was the band's name. And it was, I don't know if he knew what he was getting into, but he's keeping up with them and he's wearing a jacket. And he's having to play so fast that the jacket starts falling off his sleeve, like shimmying out of the jacket. But he was great. I mean, he hung in and it was a great performance, but sometimes they needed Max, sometimes they needed just the horn, sometimes they needed Mike Merritt or Scott or a keyboard.
Or a lot of times wouldn't they just kind of do backup singing too,
because
they all had, they're all great singers.
Well, there is, we should we talk about Disturbed? The most watched Conan clip of all time is a musical act.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
and it was Disturbed doing a cover of Sound of Silence.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, so, how did that come about?
So they had actually been on, the funny thing is that song is unlike anything else that Disturbed does, you know?
As, yeah, as
you
would, I know.
Think by the name.
The antithetical.
They had to rethink their whole act.
Content, I guess. they had been on the show before, and they had a new album, and their publicist pitched it to me, and she said, "Now here's what they want to do, and the label will pay for it," which was probably the most important part. They want a 16-piece string section.
Oh wow!
They're like, okay, because they have this cover that they want to do, and so you know, that took some back and forth to sort out, and it's a big production. We actually shot that. Once in a while, we would pre-tape music, and that was a case where we pre-taped music in the morning,
right?
And ran it like a week later or something. And once it posted, it was just insane. It was a great performance and very sort of compelling, and it caught on.
Look at that cello player; she's knocking it out of the park.
Also, an undeniably great song, which helps. I mean, if it was Disturbed doing their new single with a 16-piece string section, it wouldn't. Right, you know, but it kind of had that like Mannheim steamroller appeal, you know, just this orchestral thing. And it's nuts. Every once in a while, I go back and peek at the tally.
At the numbers.
That's how it has so many views. Jim Pitt.
It's all Jim Pitt.
Trying to see if in my notes, if I jotted out down anything else that I wanted to make sure I brought up.
Yeah.
Wilco is another just great band who were. So within the first year, we had Uncle Tupelo on, and which was Jeff Tweedy and Jay Farrar.
Oh, okay.
They split up. I think it was heading in this direction anyway, but the Conan appearance actually led to the, that's when the shit hit the fan, because the songs were either Jeff Tweedy songs or Jay Farrar songs, and they went with a Jeff Tweedy song, and it was, you know, it caused a lot of strife, and they ended up splitting up, and then into Wilco and Sunvolt, both of whom we had on many times. But Wilco, you know, I love their legacy with Conan. You know, they've been on so many times, and they're such a great band.
Right.
But yeah, so we an appearance on our show did lead to the split up. Yeah.
Wow.
And that for you, that's like a stock splitting. It's like now I have two bands to book. This is fantastic.
Double the talent. Yeah.
Let's drive more bands apart.
Another great name from those early years, I think it was 95, was Jewel.
Yeah.
She, you know, made her debut as just went on there and playing acoustic guitar. And the funny thing after that was that the next morning, our receptionist took a call from Sean Penn, who called the main number and wanted to know who was that girl on the show last night. And and it actually helped propel her like to a whole nother level of celebrity, and you know,
that's so great. They,
you know,
this is Sean Penn, by the way.
Right. In fairness, he called like five times. He was a real pest. that masturbating bear.
I must have his number. Yes,
I would gauge part of the success of the booking by Conan's reaction when he went over, and you could tell, you know, after you work with him for a while, you could tell, you know, it's courteous to everyone. Yeah. And one of my favorite performances ever on the show was the first time My Morning Jacket was on.
Oh, I love that.
And they did the song One Big Holiday.
Oh.
And it ends with this big sort of almost like Skinnered like guitar rave up. And I just remember when Conan went over, of course, he didn't know who they were before.
Right.
But just him being so blown away, and you could just, it came through the TV. It was exciting, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, when he would get to be surprised by somebody and seeing them for the...
And that was always rewarding to me, It always made me feel great. Like,
You know, you're just reminding me of another show that was a big musical event in my memory, which was the last night of The Tonight Show, which I haven't thought about in for all sorts of reasons in a long time.
Yeah.
But There were many musical guests on that show.
There were.
And cameos, I think. Wasn't there like almost a super band at the end?
Yeah, playing, yeah. Well, the music guest first was Neil Young.
Right.
Which he was, you know, you remember that the team, it was the birth of the Team Coco movement, and people were so behind Conan in the Leno situation, in the Tonight Show situation. And Neil was one of them. And we were trying to find someone appropriate to do that last show. And we had all this money to spend. So we kicked into a private jet for him.
Neil's in Australia. He was not a problem.
He was in Hawaii.
is that true?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Kidding.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's fantastic.
So Neil Young flies in, and it was another Elton John kind of border song situation. I pitched to Elliot Roberts, his late manager, in my initial email to him. I said, what if Neil came on and sang Long May You Run? And Elliot is, you know, I don't know if you really paid attention. The Conan story gets bigger and bigger in the, you know. Elliot calls me back a few days later. He said, you know, I think Neil may do this. He may want to do Long May You Run. I was like, what a great idea.
I suggested it. Damn it. I want my acknowledgement.
So the rest of the show was actually pretty truncated that night because we had so much music at the end. You know, we had a full music act, and then
he had to cut off Conan's goodbye.
So I think Steve Carell did the exit interview thing, and Hanks was on, and then anyway, Neil Young is playing "Long May You Run," and this is at the end of a very emotional. I'm standing next to Jeff Ross, like bawling my eyes out. It was pretty emotional.
It was.
But then, so right after that, we go to commercial and we come back. And I don't remember, honestly, Sweens, where the idea came from. But Will Ferrell put together a super group.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think it kind of came together quickly, I think.
To perform Free Bird.
Right.
And so we started going out to people with Will doing the vocals.
Right.
You know, it could have been just our band, but we ended up with Billy Gibbons, Beck, Ben Harper, Will's wife, who didn't sing, gave birth the next day.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
She was on the set next to him.
She was holding it in that whole performance.
Yeah. I've got to get through this. Oh, God damn, this song is so long.
She was like, yeah.
I may not make it.
The Mrs. Van Zant look, or Ronnie Van Zant's old lady look, I guess. But so they did Free Bird, and Conan joined them.
Right.
So it was our band with all those special guests. And I don't know if I'm missing anyone, but I think that was it. But it was,
wow.
It was quite a rave up.
Yeah, that was great.
The perfect send-off.
Yeah. I have to tell this story about, I was in a club in Nashville, the Exit Inn, one night, there to see a band, and a guy came up to me, and I had met him before. I had met him when he was on the show, but he said, you know, I was on the show the first year you guys were on with my band. The band didn't even exist anymore, but he said, I just have to thank you. Like, you'll never know how much that meant, like, to my life and validating me to my family, you know, that I seriously, like, my career choice, that, I mean, that kind of thing, not like,
right,
you know. And I ultimately heard that from a few different people, like, just getting that gratitude. Yeah. and just showing, like, look, what I've been doing isn't a waste of time.
It's real.
You know, I'm on this TV show.
Now I can go become an accountant.
Yeah, exactly. Now I can quit. But I just always found that story, that moment really touched me because I thought, yeah, you know, we've booked thousands of people and every one of them, a large percentage of them were never heard from again. And this was a huge deal in their life, you know?
Yeah.
This was fantastic. I love talking.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Oh, I'm happy to do it.
This was great.
I love talking. I'm so proud of the Conan legacy and everything we did there as a whole show.
You should be.
The music wise, especially for myself.
Right.
And it's one that people are very fond of. And
yes.
Well, thanks, you guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim. And that was Jim Pitt, our very talented music booker.
Yeah, it was great to catch up with him.
It was great.
He has that encyclopedic memory of all those guests over the years, all those great musical guests.
I know. And he actually told us, so if you go to the Team Coco Spotify account, there are year-by-year playlists of the Conan musical guests across the shows. So if you really want to get in there, you could spend many, many hours listening to playlists of all the musical guests.
Or you could space it out over 28 years if you,
you could.
And track it.
Just one a night, yeah.
That's an amazing resource. So that's a cool way to also see, like, oh, you know, when certain bands were kind of kicking in.
Yeah, or other one-hit wonders who you never heard from again.
A few of those as well.
Yeah.
And we have a, let's do a listener question.
Yeah. It's so nice to be back with listener questions. This one says, hey, Mike and Jesse, I can't tell you just how thrilled I am to hear that you're back. I was bummed out thinking that the episode with Max might have been the last.
Me too.
You see, my father passed away recently, and geeking out on back episodes of Inside Conan really helped me during this tough time. I can probably recite verbatim the episodes with Smigel, Stack, and McCann. So you can imagine how overjoyed I was to discover that season 3 dropped, unexpectedly, on the 22nd, because his service was the very next day. Oh, no. Oh, man. Knowing that the show is back helped to keep a smile on my face while grieving. That is so nice.
Oh, that's really nice. Thank you.
We don't deserve that.
No.
On a lighter note, I also have two questions for the both of you.
Uh-oh.
Do you remember the very first content you wrote that made it to air with Conan? And do you remember the very first big laugh and or applause break that came from something you wrote? I really appreciate that he distinguished between having content on the show and getting a laugh. Yeah.
Yes. That is someone who has a true understanding of how harrowing the job can be sometimes.
This is from Jeff in Ewing, New Jersey. He says, P.S. We like you. Yeah, thank you, Jeff.
That was very sweet. Thank you, Jeff.
It was extremely sweet. We like you, and I'm sorry about your father.
Sorry about your pappy.
Do you remember the first laugh or?
I do. You know, I think I got some little joke on the first day I was there, a piece I did with Jonathan Groff. We were both hired the same day. Mm-hmm. The first piece I remember, you know, and getting a big laugh was a few weeks later. It was the OJ trial was going on. That's how long ago this was. And, you know, it was just all anyone was talking about on TV, on different channels. So I did a piece about how all the different channels were trying to cash in on the OJ trial. So I did the Weather Channel covering it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in addition to Court TV. And then I did PBS's coverage. And for that, I had the painter Bob Ross. The jurors were anonymous, so it was him imagining, you know, make your jurors look any way you want. You know, they're your jurors. You can put this face on this one.
Happy and, little accident.
And Robert Smigel played Bob Ross, and he did it perfect. He's such a great impressionist. He did a really great job.
Yes.
And I always remember that. That got a really big laugh when he came on, and that made me very happy. So I always remember that laugh.
Oh, that's great.
How about you?
Well, I don't know about the first joke I got on the show.
Right.
But I did pitch a desk piece that ended up running for a long time called BuzzFeed's Running Out of Lists.
Yes.
That was like 17 plates that could be bowls. Right. It was just like weird. And they kind of just became non sequiturs.
Yes.
But everyone would write those. And we had accompanying graphics, which was fun for me to put together.
Yes. And you would write, you always amaze me because you would add all these little jokes to the graphics that were really funny. It was kind of like, you know, we'd suggest to Conan, like, by the way, feel free to like hang out in each graphic because there's funny lines in there if you want to go for extra little laughs, which he started doing, which was great.
Yeah, that was, and then it was like pressure because I was like, oh, I gotta add a joke to everyone.
Right. You had just started working there, and to come up with a refillable desk piece, like something we called a joke bucket, where you could do the piece once a month and always come up with new jokes for it. That was like such a big score for a writer on a late night show. And you did it right away.
Well, I was so glad. I was so relieved because I think I'd been there for a few weeks before I pitched that and hadn't gotten anything on yet.
Right.
And then that happened and I was like, oh, thank God.
Uh-huh.
I know. I can relax until tomorrow.
No, and then of course you mentioned the negative of that is like, then you have to keep running it. And,
right.
And you know, the fifth time you're like, oh, not this again.
This, I know.
Right.
But it was fun. I always loved anything that other writers could contribute jokes for.
Because yes.
It just felt like, oh, these are, you know, other people's jokes were always making me laugh harder than my jokes would make me laugh.
Yes. That's why they call them joke buckets. Because mm-hmm. It was literally like, everyone, you know, send in your jokes. And,
yeah.
And, you know, when we get to
pour
like
some jokes in the bucket,
15 of them. I don't know if we've talked about this. We'd always go in and rehearse
mm-hmm.
with more beats than we like. Normally we'd do like, I don't know, 9 to 12 maybe on the show.
Yeah.
And so we'd go in with like, what, 15 to 20?
Yes.
You wanted wiggle room to cut.
Right. So that Conan could make some decisions out there too.
Yes. That was a learning curve. Like early on, we normally do 12 beats and we're rehearsing 13 beats. And
oh,
he
yeah.
would bristle immediately, like, just like, oh, okay, mm-hmm. fine.
Didn't yeah, I have guess time you guys, to write more. Yeah.
Right. You didn't have time to write. Or I guess you thought this is all we need. This is the perfect batch. And you're just like, oh, God.
Oh, no. One thing that you taught me about was how to put, because I, as the writer of one of those joke buckets, you'd also right. have to put them together in an order.
You have to pick an order.
That's such an art. And I don't know if I ever really fully figured it out, but it's almost like putting an order together of songs on an album or something where it's like,
right.
you need to start out really strong, but you don't want,
right.
you save the best one for last.
Yes.
But then you also don't want to have jokes that are too similar in the middle. You don't want it to drag. So it's kind of,
right.
there's a real method.
And your favorite ones that you know all the writers will like in rehearsal are usually not going to be crowd favorites.
Right.
You
right.
put those kind of in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So, because you don't want to put the weird ones too early because you want to get the crowd on board. Like you want the piece to be doing well
yeah.
before you go off into the
Crazy
the weird
land.
Ones. Yeah.
Right. And then if there's anything sexual, it's like, that's probably going to go at the end because people are
right.
going to go, oh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And always you wanted joke number three was usually you want an anchor. Like that should be a really strong joke too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. There's so many times where the third beat would get nothing. And it's just like, oh no.
We're done for. Yeah.
And Conan would just, he'd look up, just stare at the camera like, oh, I can't believe I have to keep going.
I have 15 more beats of this.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Well, Jeff, thank you so much. It's awesome to hear from all of you.
Thank you, Jeff.
If you are out there and have a question for us, you can email us at insideconanpod@gmail.com.
Or leave us a voicemail. We get some choice voicemails mm-hmm. at 323-209-5303.
Yeah, and if you want to link to that Spotify playlist of all the Conan musical guests, that is in our show notes. All right, and that's it for us this week.
We'll see you next week.
I don't know what would keep me away. Wild horses. Mm. We like you. Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Sean Doherty. Our production coordinator is Lisa Byrne.
Executive produced by Joanna Solotaroff, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco.
Engineered and mixed by Will Beckton.
Our talent bookers are Gina Battista and Paula Davis.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
It's the Conan Show. Put on your hat, it's the Conan Show. Try on some spats, you're gonna have a laugh. Give birth to a calf, it's Conan!
This has been a Team Coco production.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.